Hi, Stephen. You have a call today with Ken.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for listening to this new podcast. I'm very excited today. We have Ken Hughes here with me, and Ken is from Ireland. And we met in Berlin. Actually, we were both speaking at the DIY Summit. And, you know, I see a lot of speakers, but without any doubt, in the last 2 years, Ken was one of the most exciting ones to listen to. And he's very passionate about the future of customer experience. He has great ideas about consumer behavior. So I'm very, very happy that we have Ken here with us. Hi, Ken.
I am very happy to be here too, Stephen. Good to chat to you again.
Very, very nice to hear you. Is there anything you want to say as an introduction to yourself of who you are, what you do?
Sure. Well, let me just give a brief explanation. I'm a behavioralist. And actually, I mean, that's what I do for a career, but I guess I always was. Always fascinated by people, by human behavior, and by animal behavior, just by why people do what they do. And my work then in consumerism over the years with big brands all over the world has brought me to kind of a place where I was, I suppose, a consumer behaviorist, consumer psychologist, looking at why people buy, how they buy, and obviously shaping brand strategies and retailer strategies as to how we could make them buy more. I was on the evil side. And then I suppose got more into cyber behaviorism as digital transformation took off and as humans themselves spent a lot more time on digital, watched how we now as shoppers, consumers, and indeed as humans in society have changed our real world behaviors because of how we behave on digital. So that's become a fascination of mine. And obviously now that comes into its own as artificial intelligence rises and becomes kind of a strong user interface for people. Our interaction with technologies in the future, you know, I'm just fascinated by the next generation Gen Z consumer who just is hardwired for that. So the step change that's coming in terms of how people behave, that's all my area. So I love speaking about it, love researching it, and love watching every single 6 months, watching the shift, be that a cultural shift, a social shift, technological shift. The step changes are just continuous. Mm-hmm. It's like riding an escalator for the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, it's been really, really exciting and good for us. We can talk about it. We can present about that. And, you know, I was just wondering, if you look at the latest evolution, how would you describe current customer behavior or customer expectations?
I think higher than ever before. It's kind of like Shakespeare had this wonderful quote that expectation is the root of all heartache. So the higher the expectation you have of anything, the more chance you will be let down if you are let down, and the harder the fall. I remember I was on holidays this summer with my kids, and I watched this teenager climb the diving boards, and you know there was one of these really ridiculously tall ones. Mm-hmm. So a typical young teenage boy, 14, 15, you know, goes to impress all his mates and climbs it. And of course, when you get to the top of those things, you know, it's a lot higher up there than it looked from down below. And I remember him taking a dive off it, and it was not a good dive. It was a real hard flop. And I remember thinking to myself, just at that moment, that's kind of what consumers are doing every day, that the height of their expectation in terms of what they expect from brands and businesses keeps building. And it keeps going higher and higher and higher and higher every single year. And I think, I mean, I've been studying human behavior and particularly consumer behavior for 20 years through the Inside Agency and now as a thought leader. And I got to say that the last 4 or 5 years, people's expectations, not only from brands and businesses, but from life, from their relationships, from everything, has accelerated and doubled. It's kind of like a Moore's law of expectation even. Mm-hmm. So I think what's happening is that the higher that tower of expectation gets built, when everything is going well, you get away with it every time. But of course, the moment there's something gone wrong on a customer journey point of view or a customer experience perspective, they feel the pain of the fall a lot harder than a previous generation of consumers might have because their expectations are simply higher.
Yeah.
So what I'm seeing is a far more expectant consumer, no desire to let you fail even once. You know, the one click, one swipe consumer, they want it now, they want it better. So we've been throwing around the word frictionless for so long. Mm-hmm. We all kind of know what it means, but actually you don't know what it means. What it means is that you lose the business the moment there's any kind of pain point. And so really having a completely understandable customer journey, completely well mapped, identifying the pain points, dissolving them before they get to grow. This is just part of kind of a hygiene factor approach to customer experience now, as opposed to, you know, 5 years ago, you'd have been like a strategic guru if you'd walked into a room and said, okay, here's what we're going to do. And so, whereas today, It's kind of just the expectation. Everything will work. Everything will be perfect. You'll surprise and delight your shopper and consumer along the way. You'll predict their behavior. You'll personalize the communications. It's all drifting into hygiene, you know? It's
scary. Yeah. Well, and I think the main problem is for most of the companies that I work for is that, you know, we all know that the experts in actually creating the world that you just described are the big technology companies from both US and China. And many more traditional companies are really having a tough job to get there. What is your feeling? What should, you know, let's say more traditional companies that grew up in the analog world, what should they do to actually live up to those expectations?
They should have you and me speak with them every week, Stephen. I think, you know what? Do you know what's missing? And this is something I've been thinking about for a while. It's nothing to do with technology. I mean, I get that question all the time, particularly, I'm sure you do too, from small businesses. You know, if you do a conference and there's people with small businesses in the room, and they're right to ask the question, you know, what can we do? We can't invest in $5 million systems. We can't do all this. And I think what it all comes down to is creativity for me. I think technology would not answer your question. Ever. Technology is a fantastic enabler to, you know, to spin the big data, to run the algorithm, to do the machine learning, to be better at behavior where we could never have, you know, a human could never have processed 5 billion transactions in a day, but we can now. And that's great. So we have all this technology, but ultimately making a difference in someone's life needs a human and it needs creativity. So you need to decide, okay, how can we surprise the consumer today? How can we go beyond their expectations to the point where they will build brand advocacy and talk about us on social media? How can we actually build peer-to-peer connections? And you have to be creative. And that's it. The brands that are winning are the brands that are applying the technology, but they're applying it in a creative way. If you fail to apply it in a creative way, then it's just technology for the sake of technology. And, you know, you see all that. So, I mean, you know this example of the Flyzoo hotel. So if you look at the Alibaba hotel and you look at the AI facial recognition going on in there, I am fascinated by, you know, we always start using new technologies kind of in a novelty way, but then bit by bit they creep into the norm. And I can see facial recognition. I mean, in that, I presume have you been to the Flyzoo hotel? And you've certainly seen the videos if you haven't, and I'm sure all your listeners.
I saw the videos, but I haven't been there yet.
So, I mean, all the listeners will probably have be familiar, or maybe if you aren't, go on to YouTube and have a look. So the idea that you book and you send a photograph or you scan using your mobile phone, so then even by the time before you even arrive at the hotel, they've already got your facial image stored. And then you just walk in, your face is shown to the kiosk, spits out you show some ID to prove it's you, and that's it. No key card, off you go. The elevator opens at your face, the room opens at your face. And I'd imagine at the moment, that's quite a novelty for a consumer. It's probably got a bit of a tourist angle to it. You know, they're not suggesting this should be the norm tomorrow. But you know what? In 5 or 10 years, it probably will be the norm because it's just that frictionless, seamless part. So we're just seeing novelty drifting into every day. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's a creative implementation of facial recognition. It's good. I think mostly to come back to your question, the creativity is missing from most middle businesses. And it's a problem at the board level. It's a problem at C level in terms of management. It's just a kind of a case of, oh my God, disruption's here. Let's just paddle faster, as opposed to really getting creative and saying, okay, let's do the burning platform thing. Let's set the whole thing on fire and let's rethink the business. Let's rethink how we talk to consumers. Let's rethink how we even bring our products to market. Let's, you know, not enough of that's going on. So you can blame technology or your lack of investment or your inability for the funding, but actually, with a pen and a paper, some colored crayons and a bit of creativity, you can still reinvent your business.
Yeah, it's true. But it sounds easier than it is, of course. Have you seen companies, let's say, from really traditional industries like finance or telco or energy or, you know, all those kind of companies, have you seen some of them that are actually moving up their game and that are actually getting closer to what people want in today's world?
I think there's two things going on. The startups in those areas that you just mentioned are. Yeah. So I think if you come to those areas and those industries without the baggage of the corporate culture, I think you are, yeah, you're able to do some pretty cool stuff. You'll be able to invest in technology from the beginning. You've no legacy systems. But I think more to that, it just comes from your understanding of putting the customer in the center. I think any of the other businesses traditionally, and finance is a great example. Utilities are another one. Even something like estate agents, you know, which have actually no value from a transactional point of view, a middleman. Most middle people have been taken out of the loop at this stage. So I think a lot of those traditional businesses, if they're already there, they start to try and kind of do some things. But to me, it's very lipstick on the gorilla. You know, it's kind of stuff around the edges. They're not willing to disrupt their own business from the inside. They're not willing to actually think, do you know what, we need to just rip up the rule book here and start again. I think there's just too much. They're either too big. It's that oil tanker thing, you know. Yeah. And they're scared to be a speedboat. And they prefer to be the oil tanker. There's certain stability in that. And also, one of the things that I'm interested in is age and the way actually executives in the current market work. So the average, you know, director or CEO, CMO, CTO is about 18 months to 2 years in their job. And they tend to move around quite fast because when you move around, you get a better deal and you know, there's only certain people in the pond. And because the short-termism of just get something done the next year or two is quite appealing on the CV, I don't think we're getting any longevity in vision. And I think people just want to make a quick impact when they're there and move on. And then why would you rock the boat completely and disrupt the entire thing for that duration if you're going to be bonused by your performance this year? So I think we have something fundamentally wrong with the way business is organized. Run. I mean, if you walk into, as you do and I do, you walk into an average board, you'll be faced with 12 people. They'll all be over 60 and two of them will be women. That's an issue. That's an issue that 10 gray-haired men are running this company with two women, and the age is wrong. The connection between what the reality is wrong. Again, they're happy to live out their life on the board there. Don't rock the boat. I have a concern that the startups are winning, not because they're small and agile companies. Maybe it's because the people who are running them are more creative, hungrier for change, maybe come with an open mind as opposed to blinkered vision of success. So yeah, lots of factors.
Yeah. It's interesting. If you look financial services, I agree. You got so many startups that are doing a great job. And I see a change in their mindset as well. In the beginning, I saw many startups in the financial industry that thought we're gonna kill the banks. But today I meet a lot of them that are very happy that banks are still around because banks become their biggest customers and it's a potential exit scenario. That same feeling is what I get when I talk to the banks. I mean, these guys were worried about the startups in the beginning and now they're really happy that we got these startups because some of them are really relevant and they can actually cooperate with them and in that way speed up some of the innovations that would not be possible if they would have to do it all by themselves in their internal structure. So it almost feels like they're going to need each other at the end of the day.
I think what you're touching on there is strategic partnerships. I think when we talk about disruption, it is such a big scary thing and there's equal amounts of fear and excitement when you talk about it. I think the challenge for a business, if you try and sit there and answer all the questions on your own, you're just a little bit foolish. The same forces are facing everybody in the industry. So it does make sense for people to pool resources, pool ideas and pool routes to market in order to be able to meet the needs of this new consumer. Because, you know, by the time you meet their needs, it'll have moved on anyway. So yeah, I think the important thing of partnering with smaller players, more agile players for innovation and creativity, if you think you don't have it yourself. Similarly for technology solutions, you know, there's no need to partner or there's no need to have everything yourself. Maybe you can outsource and partner with other people and find some kind of symbiotic relationship. So I'm not too sure enough that that's happening because I think disruption is one of things that scares people so much that they think, well, we better get this right internally and not tell anybody. And I think again, going back to the startup culture and why they might be more successful, I think startups are collaborative by their very nature, because when you start, you don't have the budget, you don't have the connections, you need to make them. So they're very open, collaborative type organizations. They're hungry to collaborate with anyone else that might be able to give them a step up. Yeah, and therefore the culture from the very beginning grows into a collaborative culture, whereas most organizations are run as little silos and prisons, don't have it, you know?
Yeah. If you tapped on artificial intelligence in the beginning of the talk, I have the feeling that we're at the beginning of a new S-curve. It's like back in 2007 when we got when we started with smartphones, and we yeah. didn't really know back then what the impact would be on the day-to-day life. Today we do know. I think we're at the same place now with AI. We're at the beginning of a new S-curve. We all feel it will have an impact, but we don't really know what it will do yet.
Yeah.
What's your opinion? How do you see AI changing customer experience?
I think it's nearly like a J curve, nearly. I think it's going to be faster than an S this time. I think the adoption rates are going to be much faster. I think we're going to go up much, much quicker.
Okay.
I think the difference with the step change of the mobile and this one, I think because people have gone through the mobile and their behaviors, their the way they live their lives have been affected so positively by the device. I think, and we're seeing that obviously, we're seeing the adoption of smart speakers, you know, being faster than ever before, of other technologies. I think the consumers themselves are really ready for voice interaction. They're really ready for algorithms and learning, and they just take it for granted. They're already quite happy that Netflix is recommending mm-hmm. series for them, and you know, LinkedIn is telling them where to work, and Facebook is telling them who to be friends with, and Tinder is telling them who to date and love, and you know, we just accept it. You know, we've given our data, the systems mm-hmm. are for us, the algorithms know what we want. Great. So, you know, I get asked, are people ready for AI? Well, they're already using it. They just don't know it's AI. You know, they're already quite happily using it. So I think AI is definitely going to be a huge step change. What I'm fascinated by is the removal of the consumer from the consumer decision-making process, because that's obviously my area of interest is mm-hmm. consumer behavior and consumer psychology. So for years, and I know you talk about this too, in terms of the size of the digital shelf and the size of the, you know, the reality of let's say purchasing using voice.
Right.
So I am interested in the growth of subscription service, particularly let's take consumer goods retail. Fascinated mm-hmm. by, of course, that's slowly drifting towards a subscription model. You know, companies like Boxed in the US taking a massive chunk out of the warehousing and wholesale business. And then I'm really interested in that idea of once you set your, you know, maybe you have that conversation once or twice with your virtual assistant about buying whatever quilted toilet tissue you like, and it gives you your two or three options. Of course, you're going to pick one of the two or three. You're not going to delve into anything deeper than that using voice. You might set, I want the best price deal, or I want the one that gets most delivered faster, or whatever, you know, whatever your preference is. But once you've set those preferences, it's such a low involvement product, you're unlikely to ever go back to those preferences and open them up again. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you walk down a retail aisle and the yellow stickers are there, you know, you can be swayed one way or the other by your brand on any given day if we've done our shopper marketing right. Same on digital, you know, if we get our page placements right and stuff, it might sway you. But once you hand that over to the machine is just going to continuously buy the cheapest quilted toilet tissue of a certain brand quality level that you've set. And you don't really care what brand it is, do you? You don't give a damn as long as it keeps coming when it's supposed to come. And then you're removing a consumer from the decision-making process. Mm-hmm. So now the systems that we've built, the B2B and B2C systems for the last 50 years to do with advertising, sponsorship, marketing, communications, all fall away, because at one point there was a human somewhere involved and we could somehow influence them with our neuromarketing or with our, you know, behavioral economics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really interested to know what consumer behavior will look like without a consumer. Well, there's a yeah. consumer, but there's not the shopper. The shopper is replaced by the algorithm. And then you extend that a little bit, because people say, well, yeah, that's fine, but that's only for low involvement products like toilet tissue. And you think, well, okay, how about your car insurance? Let's hand our car insurance over. Let's hand your house insurance. You know, the dull things that no one cares about. Only probably 7 or 8 data points. So of course the machine can get you the best car deal. And in fact, it can change your car insurance every second week. It'll just happily shop away, change it for you, keep doing that. So it'll minimize your cost at all times. Or if you value, you know, the best cover, it'll do that for you. So once you've handed over that, then you'll do your travel insurance. Then someday your virtual assistant will tell you, well, you know, I see you doing lots of research on that skiing trip. You tend to go to the same resort every year. And I've learned that. So here's a deal for a hotel and a flight to bring you to the resort this winter.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, oh, cool, that's predictive. That's actually what I needed. Yeah, cool. You had a look in my diary, found the holiday that I blocked, and then went off with those dates, found a flight in a hotel for me in the resort I like. And actually, that does look like a very good deal. Great. And you press the button. Now, that's a high involvement purchase. You've just purchased a holiday, a hotel, a flight for your family and yourself. And if the virtual assistant gets that right once or twice,
mm-hmm.
that's the tipping point for me, because...
Yeah.
At that point, you think, well, I trust this thing more than I trust people in my life in terms of, mm-hmm. you know, and so this idea that, oh, for low involvement products, people will use their virtual assistants, but for high involvement, they won't, I think is fundamentally flawed.
Yeah.
Just like we all trust our resource, our technological, our smartphones completely. you know, the systems are getting better and better, they're faster and faster, and you just trust them more and more. And once the consumer steps out, we're into B2M marketing, business to machine. So now it's a case of, if you want to sell your toilet tissue, you've got to be in that top one or two. You got to influence the algorithm. How do you do that? So all the traditional marketing roles that we've designed for 50 years and teaching universities to today are kind of dead. So it comes to, well, how do we influence people from now on? And as people hand more decision-making to the machine, what will they do with their lives then? What kind of brands will they want to interact with? Mm-hmm. What decisions will they want to make? And that's mm-hmm. a step. And again, people, one of my favorite questions to get at conferences, I'm sure you get it too, is, you know, what's the next disruptive thing? Mm-hmm. I always say to people, well, we call it disruption because we have no idea. Mm-hmm. Like if we knew, we'd call it predictive change. It'd be great. So this idea of AI is definitely going to disrupt. How it will disrupt, I'm sure. I think a bit like, you know, I think when Steve Jobs stood up and showed us all that phone 11 years ago, mm-hmm. he didn't know what was going to happen. He knew that it was a much smarter way to interface at mobile. He knew what he had in terms of technology, but he had no idea of what was actually going to catapult mobile commerce and spawn Uber and, you know, all the stuff that happened mm-hmm. after. Like, there was no way you can predict that. And same thing with the autonomous vehicle, same thing with AI. These are huge changes to how we live our lives. And when that comes along, of course, everything changes. Consumerism is one, but so is everything else. Social interaction, cultural expectations, morals, everything changes, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree with you.
I agree. I mean, the impact on branding is huge. Yeah? It's a fundamental shift in the way we brand. What do you think brands need to do to make sure they can pass by the filter so that they can, that people say, I want to have Heinz ketchup? What do they need to do to make sure that people still remember the brand name and actually call out for it in a world where maybe, you know, traditional advertising is more and more limited in terms of impact, and where you have a world of an AI platform that takes care of your purchases more and more and more? What can you still do to get there? What's your thought on that?
I think it's probably the same thing we've always been trying to build with customers, is connections. I think if you have an emotional connection with a brand, then you can win through anything. And to have a genuine connection, you have to do something different or be first. And let me ask you a question. What was the name of the first girl you kissed?
Veerle.
Okay. Do you remember the fourth girl you kissed? The third girl you kissed. Yeah. So the first one you remember because, you know, it was a special thing, and there's so even at this, whatever, you know, it's at least 3 months since that happened now. So, you know, even all these years later, you still remember the connection maybe. I'm interested in connections because, I mean, again, I've watched brands over the years fail, and usually they fail because they don't make a connection of any relevant sort with their end user. Mm-hmm. And so I think connections is where, or some kind of emotive connection is what you're trying to achieve. The more technology that goes in between you and the end user, the harder that's going to get. So, you know, if you walk around a supermarket or a store today, people try and connect using point of sale. That's just rubbish, literally. So it's, you know, unless we're going to actually invest in their communities and their lives. And again, this is where artificial intelligence, of course, helps us. It helps us do that kind of keyhole approach as opposed to open heart surgery. We can go in with hyper-personalized behavioral data. We can really make connections that matter to consumers, show them that we understand their lives. Brand is there for them when they might need us. They're the kind of connection. And that's going back to my point about creativity. You know, I don't see enough of that being done in terms of people starting their week with, okay, let's all sit around a table and let's come up with a creative way of making customers smile and making our customers feel something today. If you can do that, then I think then they'll start calling Ryan's Sketch from the other side. If you don't do that, then you're just another brand, you know.
Exactly. And you know, I'm convinced that all of us will have at a certain moment like an omnipresent personalized AI platform that helps us with our day-to-day lives. And I'm also more and more convinced that the leaders in that field will be the leaders of today, the big platforms, both from the US and China. And I think they will be, you know, continue to lead in this field because they have access to talent and data to actually make it happen. Do you follow that, or do you think that, you know, knowing that this is a new era, that we're going to have new players, and that the big platforms will bounce into their limits at a certain moment?
I think that that's an uncertain one. I think it's impossible to answer that, really, because again, every now and then some new player arises, some new technology, a step changes everything. So I'm sure that will continuously happen. It will. Again, the startups will be there. They might be gobbled up by the bigger players as they grow. But I think any change is generally coming from new thinking. I am interested in voice. I agree with you with the virtual assistant stuff, by the way. I think, I mean, looking at the evolution of the user interface from keyboard to mouse to mobile to voice, I think obviously voice is so easy for consumers to use. Mm-hmm. And the work that's been done in the last few years just is amazing when you see the stuff coming out of the labs. So I think the next few years, as people get really comfortable with voice and just thinking, hey, this is really easy, wow, then we're going to see that, you know, human to machine interaction catapult in a way that we've never had before. So I mean, every user interface has made it simpler. So when people were just keyboard bound, you had to have all the DOS instructions, and that was difficult. And then you had a mouse clicky click in the window, that became easier. And then you had a swipe and a touch, and at that point, you know, someone like my 75-year-old mother wouldn't have been sitting down at a keyboard and a mouse, but she can use an iPad. Of course she can. And so it gets better and better. It reaches, it broadens and deepens the reach all the time. Mm-hmm. And voice, of course, is the ultimate, you know, that we can have complete interactions with all sorts of stuff. So I think, you know, if we have, we had m-commerce, just fascinated to know where v-commerce will go in terms of how it'll accelerate consumers' interaction with everything. And yeah, I mean, and do I have an answer? No, I have no idea what's going to happen, but I can I can guarantee you it's going to be, you know, another crazy roller coaster ride for us all. I mean, I love asking customers at the moment and brands, you know, what their voice interaction strategy is. Like, so, you know, I say, look, you know, if you go back 10 years and you didn't have a website or an e-commerce omni-channel strategy, you'd kind of be a bit of an idiot. And 5 years ago, if you didn't have a mobile commerce or an app or a mobile strategy, you'd kind of feel a bit stupid, wouldn't you? They said, well, now we're here now at voice. So where's your strategy? You know, don't wait for 5 years to write it. Because now as these things emerge is when you need to be thinking about, how do we interact with people through voice? How does our brand interact through voice? How do we, as you said, come up and get selected when they're shopping? How do you know? So it's, now is the time we need to be thinking about things before the solution is completely bedded down, but you need to be thinking about it now as to how you want to be positioned. And because, you know, there's no point in coming late to that party.
No, I agree. It's the most natural interface we ever have. You don't need to be able to read or write. You don't need to be able to see to work with voice as an interface. So the more, and I think today, I don't know if you have them at home, those interfaces. I got them all three here, like Siri, Google Assistant, and Alexa. And they're a lot of fun, but they're also like only 90% accurate. And especially when you change with Google to Dutch, you know, my native language, it's maybe to 85%. So it's good. But imagine that we get to 99% 3 or 4 years from now. And imagine that you have all these brands and services connected to it. I mean, this can, I think today we still use it as a gimmick, but you can easily see in 3 to 4 years from now how this could be a fundamental partner in life.
Yeah. I mean, we still get annoyed by them when they drop stuff and they people are still playing with them. And again, if you look at the stats for the smart speaker, the majority of people are just using them as an intelligent music player in their house. Yeah. That's not, it's like a game of chess. They're being positioned in every home.
Yeah.
And the technology is getting better and better and better. And that's not to say that they won't suddenly explode in terms of use 1 year, you know?
Exactly.
And that is already happening. So people are using them to buy, people are using them to shop, they're interacting with them more, the technology, the voice recognition is getting better and better. But everything in its first kind of shape and form is a bit clunky. Everything, every piece of technology you've ever interacted
with. Well, look at our iPhones. The first iPhone, you used it to call. I mean, those were the days, huh? We called and we checked email, and that was about it. I think if you look at your home screen of your iPhone, if I look at it, I mean, Instagram wasn't there yet. Uber wasn't there yet. Mobile banking wasn't there yet. I have WeTransfer on it, wasn't there yet. WhatsApp didn't exist yet. I mean, the 90% of the stuff that is now on my home screen of my phone didn't even exist when this device was 3 or 4 years old.
I mean, I think so. We just need to look at the AI technologies that we have today as being the beginning of a fantastic journey. And you know, people who say, oh, well, you know, it's a fad, it's a novelty, consumers won't like it, the humans won't let the machines take over. I just disagree. I think the humans
Me too. Once the algorithm delivers, we trust it.
Yeah.
I'm convinced about that. Well,
I agree.
Hey, Ken, thanks for your time, your stories, your humor, your insights. I love listening to you. So thank you very much for your time and sharing your expertise.
It was a good chat. And maybe that girl who you first kissed will listen to the podcast and get back in touch.
Yeah, or maybe I get in trouble when someone else listens to it.
That's true, but we're all allowed to kiss, surely. No.
It was good to talk, and we'll be in touch soon, my friend. Bye-bye.
Look forward to it, pal. Look forward to it.